If one big beautiful bill has left you with one big confusing question, turn to BHM CPA Group. Their experienced professionals break down complex changes in tax law, accounting, and business regulations so you can make informed decisions with confidence. Simplifying the complex is what BHM CPA Group does best. Don't wait. Visit bhmcpagroup.com and let's get to work. BHM, because running a business is hard enough. Your finances shouldn't be. Visit bhmcpagroup.com today.
So welcome to iCoat Products Concrete Conversations podcast. Today we're going to be talking about overlays, separating good overlays from bad overlays. Tim, welcome back to the podcast.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be here.
So Tim, let's start with the basics. Let's just jump right in. What defines a concrete overlay from just laying down concrete?
Well, concrete is generally poured at, 4 inches minimum. It requires a lot of prep work. It requires, some substrate prep, make sure that that's good. And then you're pouring concrete. It's expensive. You've got to have a lot of big crew, lots of tools, and a truck to bring the concrete. Whereas a concrete overlay is just a 50-pound bag of grout, essentially. It's made specifically for it. We call it an engineered cement. That's mixed up with a resin, and a 50-pound bag would likely go, 80 to 120 square feet, but it is applied over the top of the concrete. So it's creating a shell over the top of the concrete to do a number of things, but mostly look aesthetically pleasing, and some protection there for the concrete as well. So it goes over concrete.
Yeah, we talked in the past on one of the other shows about the way concrete prices were through the roof. The availability was hard. Where's that market currently? Just quickly.
For concrete?
Yeah.
Oh, again, it just depends on where you're at. If you can even get concrete right now, first round, second round, third round, the smaller concrete guys are, they're begging for mud. They're pouring in the afternoon. A lot of people can't. Shotcrete guys get it a day or two a week. There's a shortage of it right now for a number of reasons, but it's very expensive. It's probably at an all-time high.
Okay. And so just for our listeners, if you want to just keep in touch with us over at iCoatProducts.com and, ping us, we keep our head to the ground when it comes to concrete prices of product, and we're always there as a resource for you. So okay, let's just jump right in. What's the difference between a good concrete overlay and a bad one? Is there a quick definition?
Well, it's funny, the purpose of the overlay obviously is to look good, be functional in the fact that it's going to be a sealed surface, it's going to prevent stains, and that it has a good effect. It can be looking like flagstone or tile or wood grain or big texture with some borders or slate or whatever you want. So that's the purpose of an overlay. And there's really not a, unless you're talking about a really, really, really bad job, which we're not even going to talk about. But I'm talking about small differences, small things you can do that create an excellent job versus one that looks meh, kind of so-so. And there's not a lot of things that make that distinction.
But, in so many things in life, it really is the difference between having that expertise, right, and understanding the little nuances that make something great rather than just good, that in a lot of ways separate professionals from just practitioners.
Well, that's true. And, the thing is, the other thing that you expect is, and it's not, I'm just talking about bad aesthetic jobs. I'm talking about bad jobs that just don't last. And if poor prep is done. So if you were going to paint a car, say, if you did a lousy job on the Bondo and you didn't clean the rust off and you didn't do this, that's going to fall apart in a couple of years. And you don't want that. And it's the same exact thing. So if the concrete's not prepped properly, then the overlay's not going to stick.
Right. And talking about prepping concrete, What depth can you go to? What are the sort of issues that you face when prepping concrete? Because I think everyone sort of in their head imagines maybe cracks, but is there other situations with concrete you have to look out for?
Yeah, there's a lot of different things. You can have something with tile down, which is going to have a thin set. You know, you're going to have to grind that off. You can have some contaminants like dirt, oil, paint. All those things would be a bond breaker. And what I mean by that is when you put something over the top of it, it prevents the adhesion to the concrete directly. So the key is it's got to be clean and it's got to be sound. But there's a lot of other things that you need to look out for. Like, again, paint is one of them. You want to get that off. But you're going to see loose pieces here and there, and that's important to get those off because, again, that's going to come apart. You're going to look for those along the edges. You're going to look for those along and inside the cracks, inside the saw cuts, inside expansion joints. You're going to look for loose pieces and on the edges and things. You're going to look to see if there's a problem with the substrate where the cream is coming off. There's a lot of things that can cause that. If there's salts that have gotten onto it and eroded the top, there's a thing called alkali silica reaction, which is it's basically a gel that forms under and pushes the cream off when it gets wet from unclean aggregate. There's a lot of things that you're going to want to look for. But again, we're back to the basic, get it clean, get it sound, and then it'll be a good candidate for an overlay.
Is there a process when you're prepping a surface like this that you like to go through? Is there a recommended set of steps?
Yeah, well, and again, it depends on the concrete itself, obviously. But if you've got a really slick troweled concrete where it's finished with, you know, like a hard trowel where it's really sealed up, that we are going to want to etch with an acid wash, like a 12-to-1, 12 waters to one acid solution to open up the pores a little bit. If you've got grease or oil or whatever there, a degrease on there and a power wash. If you're outdoors, a power wash is going to be likely the way to go. You're going to get it really clean. It's going to rinse everything off. It's going to be able to get the oils and that you're going to be looking for, because you may not see it. Obviously, in a garage, you're going to see dirty motor oil. But around a pool deck or maybe even a patio, you're not going to notice oil from suntan oil and lotion and stuff like that. So we want to get that all off. So I'm going to do a light soap bath, mostly a degreaser, and then a power wash outside. Inside, I might have to grind it. It just depends. But more than likely, that's going to be the easiest way to prep it inside is by grinding it. And that'll also open up the pores like an acid wash.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier cracks and expansion joints. Obviously, we're talking about two different things here. And you even mentioned saw cuts. What do you mean by those sort of things? Explain to our audience what the difference is and how to address each of them.
Okay, well, a crack is, that's one of the guarantees with concrete. It's going to crack. Every concrete cracks. We try to control that cracking by putting in saw cuts, which is essentially whether it's the same day, some people cut the same day, some people cut the next day, but it's basically taking a diamond blade. And if the concrete's 4 inches thick, you're going to score about 25% of the way through it. And that gives the concrete underneath of it a weak spot for it to crack. So we're trying to control the crack. An expansion joint is essentially the same thing, where you're running a tool when the concrete's wet to create a V. You've seen these Vs, you know, every so often in the sidewalks, in the garages. That's also for the same exact thing. It's to decide, I want this concrete to crack right there. A crack is where you've missed out on, you know, guessing where it's going to crack. It's just, it's cracked and there's a crack. So again, it's just a relief for the concrete to be able to move and expand and contract.
So when you say honoring joints and cracks, for the layman out there, what does that mean? How does one honor a crack?
Well, when you're doing an overlay, you have to honor the expansion joints. You have to honor anywhere that it's going to be moving. If you bridge, if you took it and troweled straight across there, then it's going to crack back. When that concrete moves, by adding an eighth of an inch of a cement-based coating to 4 inches of concrete, 6 inches of concrete, whatever, it's not going to keep that from moving. It's going to crack right through the overlay. So the idea is that we want to honor that, especially with an expansion joint. It's the easiest because those are usually set up in squares or rectangles or whatever. So we just sell somebody a pattern and incorporate that expansion joint into the pattern. If we were doing a random stone pattern, we just tape right through it and ignore it, and it really blends in. It does a good job of hiding it. But if you work it into a slate pattern or whatever where you've got a break there, then that's a good idea. Saw cuts, same thing. You trowel over the top of that, open it back up. But the and a crack is a crack. So there's a lot of different thought processes on how to deal with cracks. I like to just open them up with a blade on a grinder and incorporate that into some kind of a pattern or make it look like a big cracked stone. You know, you go out, wow, that's a lot of cracks. That's awesome. And the customers had everybody else out there going, oh, those are terrible. We got to take it all out and put it back in. But if you can incorporate it into a pattern that looks good, that's really the way to deal with it. But some people like to cover those up with, epoxy and cloth or, anything, fiberglass, tape or whatever. But no matter what happens, that's going to move. And if it moves and moves and moves and you've covered it 2 inches on either side with tape or cloth or whatever, then you've got 4 inches that's coming off over the top of that crack. It'll look worse than just letting it crack by itself. So you have to honor those. I like to leave them open so they can move.
So I actually saw a job you did where it almost looked like a European, Italian sort of look. It was kind of beautiful, and I remember I'd seen the crack, and then it reminded me of that I think Michelangelo painting with the guy with his finger stuck out and the crack going up. It looked really cool. So I think that's what we imagine, right, when we say we honor those joints and incorporate them into the design.
Yeah, and then if you need to add more, you can just take your margin trowel and add cracks to cracks, and you got real cracks, you got fake cracks, but it works.
Right. Yeah. So you also talk in here about inside edge mistakes. What's meant by an inside edge mistake?
Well, and again, we're going back to the same thing where we don't want to cover up something that needs to move independently from the concrete. And on the inside edge of, say, up against the house, between the house and the slab that's poured, there's going to be something there, or maybe it's going to be the lack of something. But when it was poured, there was something there that homosote, whether it's rubber, whether it's some kind of a material that's in there that allows the concrete to move and not be bonded directly to the house for a number of reasons. But if that's gone, then when we trowel it, it's just going to be falling down into there, and it's going to have a big gap, and it's not going to look great. If it's got homosote in it or some homosote in it and it's missing some, and you trowel over the top of that again, now you've done the same thing. You've created something that's going to crack and pop off. So the idea is we need to clean that up, whether it's taking the homosote all the way out, if it's really deteriorated and not nice. There's things that we can fill that in with. I take some of the resin, mix it with sand, pour it in there. It creates a really nice looking finished expandable material. It's difficult to take the homosote out and then try to get another one back in there. It's dirty. It doesn't fit the same way it would when it was freshly poured, all those, it's probably moved a little bit. So if you don't detail out that edge, then it's going to look bad. You're going to see at the end of the job, right as it goes into the house, some, you know, texture troweled over the homosote, something that's, you know, 2 years old that's chipping off because it wasn't done. So the idea is we want to detail that out, whether it means if the homosote's brand new and looks great, tape it off, trowel your overlay, cut right the edge right between the overlay and the margin trowel, and you're going to keep that job clean. And that's the same way we deal with saw cuts, expansion joints, or whatever. When I'm out pulling my tape, then I'm going to be detailing stuff. So on the edge of the expansion joint, I'm going to run a margin trowel down there, both sides, keep it clean. It's just as you're going through, you're detailing inside edges, expansion joints, making sure the cracks are on it. All those things are things that are going to create a clean looking job. You wouldn't want to all of a sudden have a big, you know, a stone's not going to have a big lumpy pile up against the house. You know, it's just not, it doesn't look clean that way.
Got it. So if the homosote is missing, do you tape that edge? Is there like a process for that to create a clean line on that inside edge?
If it depends on the job. If the homosote was entirely missing, what I'd probably do is I'd just go ahead and trowel out my overlay, and I would get that all, you know, let it run down in the back and everything else. And I'd take the margin trowel and cut that so it's, you know, nice and clean on the edge. And then after the fact, before you're finished with the job, I'd mix up some sand and resin into like a paste. You know, of course, I'd tape it off with tape and paper so I don't make a mess on top of my overlay. But then I just pour that liquid down in there, and it kind of self-levels, lays flat, looks real clean, and it can move because it's a glue binding glue, but in between there you've got basically the sand is a kind of an aggregate so that it doesn't shrink too much. It's a really easy way to do something and it looks clean.
Great. So if an inside edge is something up against a structure, would I be right in saying that an outside edge is where it meets the lawn, the rest of the garden, a drop off, that sort of thing?
Yeah, and an outside edge is actually even equally or probably a little bit more aesthetically. If it's a mess, you're going to see it worse out there because, you know, it's right there where you're in the yard and you're walking in and out. So the outside edge is exactly that. It's where it, say, meets the pool deck, meets the pavers, meets the yard, whatever is beyond the edge of the patio. That's the outside edge of that. And this is where I see the most mistakes made, because when you're troweling it out, you could be in a big hurry. I mean, you know, you've been with me when we've troweled it out. It's 110 yeah. degrees outside and stuff's taken off really fast. And you got to know what to do. So on the outside edge, I find the easiest way to deal with that is when you trowel it, let it run down over the edge, you get good coverage. And then in my back pocket, I keep a margin trowel and I just cut any drips off. The drips will, once they harden, they're going to look terrible. You're going to have to grind it. And then it's never going to look right. So you're going to just want to cut those drips off on the outside edge as you're going. And that really seems to be the easiest way to do it. And then after it's all done, you've created the surface, you can come back and then you can take a brush, you can take a margin trowel, you can add material back to that area. Brushing it on works real well, and then just rubbing it a little bit with a trowel, that it just kind of creates that finished look. But drips are a huge problem. It just looks absolutely terrible that way.
Yeah, I can imagine that's amateur hour when you're seeing stuff like that for sure. So we're going to get a little bit Shakespeare here. To base coat or not to base coat? That is the question. Explain where you're going with this.
Well, sometimes it's going to be required. And we've got two different texture materials. Grout materials. One's a texture, one's a base. The base coat is essentially for filling something in. So if you're in the Northeast, Midwest, where they, you know, get a lot of snow and throw salt on there, and it's over regular concrete and it's degraded the surface, you're going to have to base coat it. So what you're doing is essentially taking a real thin layer, but instead of adding a texture that looks like wood grain or slate or tile or whatever you're doing, it's basically self-levels to a degree and lays flat. So that's what you're going to end up taping your pattern onto. But exposed aggregate, cool deck, spray deck, even stamped concrete. Those are things anywhere you don't have a flat surface to tape on and texture on, then you can fill that in with base coat. So that's the idea. Heavily damaged concrete, base coat, something that you want to dictate a light grout line color, base coat, something that doesn't matter what the grout lines, what color they are, has a real thin grout line, has good concrete underneath it, not necessary to base coat.
So going back to inside edge, outside edge, when you're adding a base coat, you apply the same theory, right, around inside edge, outside edge, is making sure you're honoring those sections because you're now creating a new base layer.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I'm doing a base coat, then I'm going to be taping that out, the inside edge, twice, because I'm going to pull all the tape up, clean it up. It just going to create a nicer job, find out where I'm at, make sure I don't have to do anything. But if I have a problem, you know, I can deal with it at that point. But I'm going to pull all the tape, blow it off, clean it up, get it taped again, and then go over it with the texture. It's just really the best way to deal with it, to get a clean job.
So would I be right in saying that there's probably people out there who think, wow, if I had a thick enough base coat, I can just cover all these cracks, I can cover all these imperfections and just not even think about it. Is that a folly?
Yeah, if you don't honor your joints, you're going to be coming back and having to deal with an issue where that, once it's moved and you've glued two pieces that are moving independently together, it's going to crack. Ultimately, it's going to pop off. And then you're going to get a call that says, hey, I need you to come fix this. And if you have hundreds of those jobs all in a row because you never did it right, you're going to be out of business pretty quick. So the idea is, if you want to stay in business, you don't want to go back except to make more money, do the job the right the first time, and you have to honor your joints.
So you got a good base coat down there. You've prepped the surface, you've honored your expansion joints, and now we're talking about textures. Obviously, a couple of different variants of textures. Do you want us to talk us through a few of the most popular?
Yeah. I mean, you can do, you can do a wood grain texture with a brush and with a rag, create knots. You can make it look just like wood grain. It's really fantastic. It's easy one to do. You can do travertine, which is a cross-cut marble. I use a trowel and a brush, a different brush. It's a cool deck brush to give you those voids and things like that that it has in it. Slate, super easy. It's just basically a slap trowel. Figure eights for flagstone. It's just really about anything that you might want to do.
So I can imagine with that travertine look, if you do have cracks, that you could utilize those cracks along different outlines of where the particular stones would be to make it sort of blend in a little better.
Yeah, travertine is usually squares. So
am I thinking flagstones then?
Yeah, flagstone. That's what you're thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is okay. Fine because flagstone is exactly perfect for incorporating into cracks or a big crack stone pattern or whatever. But travertine is usually squares, works real well. If you had a crack here and there that wasn't a super structural crack, it's going to come back, but it's not going to open back up. So, and you may not even see it until when you see a crack the most that isn't open is when you've hosed it down and everything's drying. It's the last thing to dry, but it's not likely to open back up. But you're better off still honoring them with, especially structural cracks where they're moving a lot.
So when you're doing base coat and textures, one thing I think we maybe missed was just so people can understand the length of the job they're looking at, what are we talking dry time for both textures and base coats?
Well, and that really depends on what time of the year it is and where you're at. You know, humidity slows things down a lot. Cold slows things down a lot. heat accelerates things. I mean, here in Phoenix in the summertime, if you're troweling it out, by the time you get to the other end, it's dry, ready to stone, ready to go. So, I mean, it could be 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes, you know, at the very most. Or it could be 3 or 4 hours if it's 50 degrees and had been raining for 3 days. You know, it just really depends. A moving air will dry things out faster if you've got air that's moving across it. Interior fans, exterior wind, or bigger fans. So that's a tough one to answer.
But are we talking like if you start at a job, you know, median sort of temperature, are you talking like a week to get something done, a day, a couple of days? No. What sort of the time frame we're looking at to do? Let's say and let's use an example of like a backyard patio, that sort of idea.
Yeah. Okay. So without even really breaking a sweat, two guys could do 1,000 square feet in 2 days, super easy. Of essentially any of the looks, that would be without even really trying too hard.
Wow. Okay. That's great. And so obviously we get our texture down. We've got something that's starting to look good. You've colored it. You got it to where you want. Then we're looking at, well, actually let's stay on that for a second, because colors are a big thing. Does iCoat provide colors, options? Do you put the color into the overlay, like into the texture? How do you work with color?
Well, and it depends on what kind of color you're doing too. While we're talking about texture, let me back up real quick, because if one of the things that, again, we're talking about separating good jobs from bad jobs, and if you're applying texture and it's not coming out the way you want for whatever reason, you stop. Just stop right there. It may be too hot, so you're getting uneven texture. It may be too cold. Just stop at that point and figure out what's going on. Your mud might be too dry. It might be too cold. It might be too hot. Uneven texture looks really bad. If your mud's drying too fast, when you first start to put it down, you're getting a bunch of bubbles. That's called outgassing. It's just the water being sucked out of the texture into the concrete. We stop there and we just put down a coat of resin and water, let it dry, go over the top of that. That eliminates that problem. If it's drying too slow, the thing that happens is a lot of times you'll trowel something out and it requires retroweling it again in a few minutes. Like in the summertime here, it could be right while you first did it, onto, you know, an hour or 2 hours. And the thing is, if it's drying too slow, people are they're wanting to get back out there and finish the project, and they start hitting it too early and it just smears and makes a big looking like a bunch of pancakes everywhere. Bad look. Just you've got to wait. And then the worst thing that is my pet peeve is when I go look at any overlay job and it looks like somebody started just taking and putting it on with windshield wipers. Yeah. So you see these big swoopy stripes, and there'll be one that goes, you know, it's like a swoopy windshield wiper mark every 2 feet, all the way, like 2 feet, 4 feet, 6 feet, 8 feet, just windshield wipers all the way down. And then I finished that whole section and I'm going to go over here and there's windshield wipers going that way. That's terrible. You're not troweling properly. We don't do that. So
right.
You can trowel it out to move it.
Right.
And in a windshield wiper thing, I get that. But then come back and give it some kind of a pleasing texture. That's probably the thing that makes jobs look the worst ever. And because it's so, so bad.
Before it's dried, is there a fix for that windshield wiper look?
Before it's dried, you have to trowel it.
Oh, you have Once to trowel. It's okay.
Past the point of troweling, I would tell my guys to either scrape it or grind it off. I would never ever have a job look like that. It's the worst. It doesn't matter what color it is.
Yeah, right.
How we color it. And getting back to your color question, yeah, we've got a number of different colors, dry colors, dispersion colors that can be mixed in, sprayed on top, that can be mixed into either water or an acrylic mixture that give you a different effect. We've got acrylics, which are the most paint-like out of anything, that can be sprayed on to lighten or darken. So yeah, any colors. And again, coloring is something that you want to look natural. So, I don't see too many problems with coloring, except where people get too many deep spots and it looks like polka dots and stuff. But that's it. So that's one of my main calls that I get. How do I take care of this? Send me a picture. Okay, here we're going to pepper over the top of that with some acrylics. We're good. So coloring is something that if you screw up your texture, that's just a big problem. Screwing up your color, that's a minor problem.
So is having a bit of an artistic eye handy when it comes to obviously creating these different looks?
I don't know if it's art. I don't consider myself an artist. It's just an attention to detail.
Okay, got it.
And having some pride. If you've got some pride and some attention to detail, and you're not going to have any trouble picking up the coloring at all. You certainly don't have to be an artist.
Okay, got it. So you got that far then. Options for sealing, or do you even have to seal it? So what's the position with either sealing or not sealing?
Yeah, you would definitely want to seal it with something. No matter what, the texture is it's not like our countertop texture where that has a waterproof additive in it and things like that. This is not. This is open. It's porous. It's designed with for you concrete guys out there. It's called air entrainment, so that it can absorb some freeze thaw expansion within itself. So it's open. We definitely want to seal it. And it depends on what you want to seal with. Outside, I'm going with a solvent-borne acrylic. It's cheap, fast, and easy. It dries good. It does a great job of sealing. It has great UV protection. It smells bad for inside, so I'd use something different in there. But when you're sealing, it's kind of hard to screw it up. Again, with attention to detail, but it can be sprayed. If you're spraying, mask off the house, because you're going to spray it all over the house and you don't want that. So do that. Temperature is important. We want 45 and rising. Don't create puddles in the expansion joints or anywhere. If you're sealing over an expansion joint and you get a bunch of sealer in there, take a brush and get it out. It's not too hard to, if you had an uneven sheen from not rolling, trying to roll it too thin in some areas, just put another coat on it. Sealer mistakes are easily fixed and not really that radically important or seen anyway. We just want to make sure we get it sealed and then it looks good. One coat, two coats, whatever you want to do.
So Tim, you said 45 and up for sealer. So are we talking that people can be making money out of this when the weather's 45 degrees and up, which covers probably what, nine months of the year in most places?
Yeah, as long as it's 45 and rising, and it doesn't have to be, if it's 45, 46, 47, it starts going back down. This doesn't take very long to dry,
right?
So it's not, we don't want it to freeze. We've got a lot of room in there. So if it's 45 and rising, you're right there. In most places you can work, 10 months easily.
Wow. That's great. That's a real benefit on that. Do these overlays last? How do you maintain them? Is it something that the homeowner or the business has to spend a lot of time and energy on, or is it just set it and forget it?
Well, it depends. It's like when you buy a new car. If you want that car to look like it's a brand new car, or very close to it, 20 years from now, you're going to have it detailed. You're going to wax it. You're going to have it washed regularly. If it's dirty all the time, with bad tires and stuff like that, it's not going to look even if you try to detail it after 10 years, it's not going to look like it's been taken care of. And it's kind of the same way as that. It's a lot easier to take care of than a car, but try to keep it clean. I like to say that I like to reseal mine every 4 or 5 years. Can be resealed. Some people want to reseal it every 2 years. And then if you did that, it looks brand new all the time. I've got a job in Phoenix here. It's actually Scottsdale, that just turned 31 years old. I did it when I was a young guy. I'm not anymore. Wow. And it looks fine. It's never been resealed. The colors faded out a little bit. I bet you if you went, spent about half an hour coloring the stones again, and maybe an hour, and putting a new coat of sealer on after you power wash it, I bet it looks brand new again. It's 31 years,
that's pretty stunning for anything out there, for it to still last and still look good that long.
As far as maintenance goes, I tie that to a warranty, whereas, that's the thing people want to know. Oh, how long is it going to last? Well, that's up to you, but I will tie myself to your job for 10 years. So wow. After the first two, and I cover anything, right? No matter what happens, it'll be covered under my warranty. But the way to extend the warranty for essentially 2 year increments at a time is to spend the money to reseal it. And it's not really that much, $1, $1.20, $1.25 a square foot. So if you had, a 400 square foot job, every 2 years, you put $400 or $500 in it and it's brand new. And if there's any chips or there's any damage or there's anything that needs to get done while I'm out there doing that, I'm going to go ahead and fix that. In fact, I had a customer that was putting in an additional garage, and the backhoe, they had a backhoe there across their driveway. I'd coated their driveway. They'd taken the backhoe had taken the dumpster that they had, 20-yard dumpster, and pushed it literally across the driveway and scratched, probably 10 or 15 stones really, really bad, because it's a 20-yard dumpster being slid right across it. So anyway, they called me, hey, I need to let this guy know how much it's going to be to fix it. And I said, well, your warranty maintenance work is coming up. So, have him take care of that, whatever it is, and we'll do the whole thing. So we went out and fixed that, resealed it, looks brand new. Everybody's happy. And, it's basically covered under warranty.
Well, that's great, because, that's the sort of thing with a lot of other situations. If you had pavers and things like that, you're basically pulling pavers and going through a hell of a job to fix that situation. Now, that's great. Yeah. That's really exciting. So for people doing this, you're looking at something you can do 10 months of the year. It's cost effective for the homeowner. How's it profit margin as a last step on this? What are we looking at, money that can be made out of it for a contractor getting out there and doing this?
Oh, yeah. I used to tell everybody it's such easy money. It's like stealing. It's just, it is fantastic money. If you were getting the same money as it takes to remove and replace a slab, say, and here in Phoenix, that's $7, $8 a square foot. I'll bet you it's 15 to 20 in Chicago or somewhere like that. But if you were selling this, your material and labor costs on this, there's no possible way that it could be over, say, $3 a square foot. There's no way. Material is about $1, $1.25. If you're spending more than $2 on labor, man, your guys are just mailing in. You need to look for more, better guys, let's put it that way. But, or either that, or you're paying them $80 an hour or something. But it's the profit margins are very, very good. And it's one of those things that word of mouth, it just takes off on this. Like you're not a hero from pouring a gray vanilla concrete slab. You're just not, oh, wow, that looks good. Concrete guys would be like, wow, that looks really good, or that looks really bad. But an overlay, the neighbors are watching. They can't wait to show it off. It's just something that catches fire. You do a job, you sell two, do those two jobs, you sell five. It's just It's really, really, really good work. It's another arrow in your quiver. It doesn't replace what you're doing, but hey, I can also do this. I can also do countertops. I can also do this, your garage, whatever. But it's just having things to sell people that are good customers and keeping them happy.
So, Tim, tell people how they can contact you and get in touch. And if they're not already doing this, get started and or learn more about it.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm always available at 602-258-1114. That's it, iCoat Products. That's our main line. It's Tim at iCoatProducts.com. Or you can visit our webpage at www.iCoatProducts.com. And I'll look forward to talking to you. If you got questions, shoot me an email, call me, shoot me a text, whatever.
Tim, that's excellent. So for everyone, thanks for listening in on Concrete Conversations. We'll see you next time.